Welcome to the Republican Professor. I'm your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. Today is 8 April, 2026 years after Jesus. It is a Wednesday, and it is the week after Easter. It's between the first week of Easter and the second week of Easter. And we're back in Mirabelli versus Olson. Roger T. Benitez, District Court Judge, the federal level, appointed by George W. Bush, wrote this fantastic opinion. And you know what, guys? He just retired. And we prayed for him last time on our Chaplain's Corner in March 17th's episode. And we prayed that the Lord would bless him and that we would. The people who find his replacement would have wisdom from on high to find his replacement. And he's done a wonderful job for us here on the Second Amendment and on parental rights, upholding the Constitution against Democrat encroachment. So we stopped at page 30 of this filing. 22 December 2025. It is styled Mirabelli versus Olson. And this is the order granting summary judgment in favor of the plaintiffs. Yeah. So this is the fourth episode we're doing in this series, striking down Democrat policy of lying to parents about so-called transgender status of the kids. So we're going to continue here. I cannot wait. I'm going to take a drink of water. We're going to have a chaplain's corner after this. We're going to do Psalm 57 along with Streams in the Desert. January 28th, so stay tuned for that. B as in dog. Just kidding. B as in boy. Parents' First Amendment free exercise rights, claims 6 and 8. This is on line 10 of page 30 of 52. And how did I get this? Well, if you search Mirabelli versus Olson, it will come up, an option will come up, the Thomas More Society, which I'm showing you right now. Go to the thomasmoresociety.org /case/Mirabelli-v-Olson, and you'll get to that. That's www.thomasmoresociety.org/case/Mirabelli-v-Olson. And you'll be able to click on any of these legal documents here. And we clicked on the one from one of the ones from December 22nd, 2025, the first one, order granting summary judgment in favor of the plaintiff. So that's where we're at. And that's where we're going to continue. So I'm looking forward to this. Are you? Raise your hand if you are. Okay. We're going to get to this, the Poe and Doe stories. It's pretty heavy material, dude. It's very important stuff. And we're probably going to go through three, right up till three. And we'll stop. I'd like to get to C. C is in dog. Just kidding. C is in cat. Teachers' First Amendment free exercise rights. But I think we might have to get to that next time. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how much energy we have to go through this. The subclass of parents and guardians of public school children. So says Roger T. Benitez. By the way, Cuban descent. His family fled communism, so he understands on a deep level. That's why he gets the gun issue too. the self-defense issue. You can't criminalize self-defense. It's innocent conduct. You cannot criminalize innocent conduct. Listen to me here. You cannot criminalize innocent conduct. It makes no sense to regard innocent conduct as criminal. Hello. As my mentor Michael Yulman used to say, hello. Hello. Roger T. Benitez got it. The subclass of parents and guardians of public school children were on line 11, page 30, under letter B as in boy. The subclass of parents and guardians of public school children also seek a declaration that the state defendants' privacy policies. I just found another typo. The state defendants should have an apostrophe S or an S apostrophe because it's possessive. Yeah? Yeah? Right here. The state defendants' privacy policies, that's possessive, violate their First Amendment rights to the free exercise of religion and specifically to direct the religious upbringing of their children. That's claim 6 and 7. Applying Mahmoud versus Taylor, 145 Supreme Court Reporter at page 2332, starting, that was 2025. The parents' free exercise claim prevails. See the apostrophe? Got it on parents on line 15. Nice. Parents' free exercise claim. Yeah, that's possessive. It's the free exercise claim of the parents. That's a possessive genitive. So there should be one on line 12. Should be an S apostrophe, possessive. The First Amendment to the Constitution. By the way, if you're listening on audio only and you can't see with your eyeballs what we're looking at here, it's on YouBoob. Just look at the YouBoob and you'll see what I'm talking about because I got it on the screen. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution reminds government that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the people, peaceably to assemble. Notice no split infinitive there. Yeah. And to petition the government for a redress of grievances. U.S. Constitution Amendment 1. We have long recognized the rights of parents to direct the religious upbringing of their children, and we have held that those rights are violated by government policies that substantially interfere with the religious development of children. Such interference, we have observed, carries with it precisely the kind of objective danger to the free exercise of religion that the First Amendment was designed to prevent. Although state defendants may see it as an unwelcome administrative burden, the Supreme Court reminds us that public school activities that take place inside the schoolhouse gate are not beyond the reach of a parent's free exercise right, page 31 at the top. And the right to free exercise, like other First Amendment rights, is not shed at the schoolhouse gate, quoting Tinker versus Des Moines Independent Community School Dist. Rick, 393 U.S., starting at 503, page 503. But he's quoting pages 506 to 507. That was 1969 about Vietnam. The plaintiff parents here sincerely hold religious beliefs like the plaintiffs in Mahmoud. In Mahmoud, the parents believe they have a sacred obligation or God-given responsibility to raise their children in a way that is consistent with their religious beliefs and practices. The same is true if the parent plaintiffs in this case. The same is true of the plaintiff parents in this case. As devout Catholics, my husband and I believe there are only two genders, male and female, and that God made every person as either male or female. We accept the church's teaching that nobody can be born in the wrong body, and that nobody can change their sex, and that efforts to do so are both sinful and harmful. And that was a direct quote from Jane Poe. There's more direct quotes coming. As the leaders of a devout Catholic family, my husband and I believe the Catholic Church is teaching that there are only two sexes, male and female, and that each one of us was made as male or female by God for a reason, and that one sex cannot be changed. We also believe that as parents, we have a special duty to protect our children and raise them according to our faith tradition. That's Jane Doe. More direct quotes. Okay. These are transcript quotations. And we probably are going to get to footnote 11. So stay tuned for that in one second. You know what? Let's get to footnote 11. Parent plaintiff's religious faith teaches them that God immutably created each person as male or female, that these two distinct complementary sexes reflect the image of God, and that the rejection of one's biological sex is a rejection of the image of God within that person. Thus, parent plaintiff's religious faith precludes them from adhering to or espousing gender theory, transgender theory, whether in the form of the traditional clinical view of transgenderism or the more modern view of gender diversity. Diversity. That's the amended complainant. 442, paragraph 442. More direct quotes. Parent plaintiff's religious faith also teaches them, this is footnote 11 still, also teaches them that the parent-child relationship was ordained by God, and that parents have the ultimate right and responsibility to care for and guide their children. Thus, they have a religious duty to guide their children and to refrain from doing anything that would be harmful to them or would create an unreasonable risk of harm to them. This requires them to be actively involved in all significant decision-making by their children, including gender transition. That's the amended complaint at paragraph 443. Okay, now back up to the main text here, starting at line 17 on page 31. My daughter, Child Doe, attends a public high school. Hold on a sec. My daughter, Child Doe, attends a public high school within Pasadena Unified School District in the county of Los Angeles. We are a devout Roman Catholic family. My daughter attends weekly mass and my wife with my wife and me. That's John Doe. Okay. Line 4, page 32. In Mahmud, as in this case, the parents believe that biological sex reflects divine creation, that sex and gender are inseparable, and that children should be encouraged to accept their sex and to live accordingly. An assertion of a sincere religious belief is generally accepted in law. And while religious beliefs need not be acceptable, logical, consistent, comprehensive to others in order to merit First Amendment protection, in this case, the Poes, the Does, and the class of parents' beliefs are logical, consistent, and historical. Referring to Thomas versus Review Board, that's 450 U.S. at 707-714-1981. Quote, the resolution of whether a religious belief is religious is not to turn upon a judicial perception of the particular belief or practice in question. Religious beliefs need not be acceptable, logical, consistent, or comprehensible to others in order to merit First Amendment protection. Okay, so that's where he got that quote. Mahmoud explains, a government burdens the religious exercise of parents when it requires them to submit their children to instruction that poses a very real threat of undermining the religious beliefs and practices that parents wish to instill. That's citing Wisconsin versus Yoder, 406 U.S. 205 at 218, 1972. Parents in Mahmud and here face school policies that keep them in the dark about things their schools are doing in conflict with their sincerely held religious beliefs, and which undermine their parental efforts to teach and train their children in their religion. In Mahmud, the schools rebuffed parental requests to know when transgender books were used in class. It was a modest request. The parents did not ask to have the curriculum changed. They did not ask their school for assistance in exercising their rights. They just wanted notice and the opportunity to opt their children out of the offensive book readings. As the Supreme Court described it, it must be emphasized that what parents seek here is not the right to micromanage the public school curriculum, but rather to have their children opt out of a particular educational requirement that burdens their well-established right to direct the religious upbringing of their children. Unfortunately, the school district refused to communicate this information to the parents. Page 33 at the top. Number one, the Poe's story. That's Poe, P as in Popeye, Poe. That's not their real name. The plaintiff parents in this case face a similar barrier of school silence. The plaintiff parents here need information too about if and when their child announces a new name, pronoun, and school staff begins using that change of their child's name, pronoun. In effect, if not indeed, their California public school concealed from Child Poe's parents information about the Child Poe's gender expression. Consider what the Poe family faced. This is a block quote, starting at line 10. Quote, on August 29th, 2023, my wife and I attended our daughter's middle school's back to school night. During that event, we met with several of her teachers in the classroom of her GATE teacher. None of the teachers mentioned to us that she was presenting as a different gender at school or had requested a preferred name and preferred pronouns. Her GATE teacher informed us of our daughter's involvement in the PRISM Club, but did not tell us anything about the club. We did not realize it was the gay club. I think he means homosexual because I don't think it's just about being happy. See the dictionary, okay? Or that our daughter was the president. So she's identifying as the president of the United States now? Wow. Does she get Secret Service protection? To us, the teachers all referred to our daughter by using her legal name and biological pronouns. Very interesting. Wow, this is really disturbing. This is, I mean, I've read this already and I'm disturbed as hell reading this. Are you disturbed as hell reading this? If not, why not? Tell me in the comments. Good Lord. Lord have mercy. The administrators were not forthright with the Poe's about whether the school perpetuated the child's new gender diverse. Oh, it's so diverse. Name. Quote, upon learning the school socially transitioned our daughter without our knowledge and consent, my wife and I attended an in-person meeting with the school principal and school psychologist to ask if they were calling our daughter by a different name or using different pronouns. They said no. Liars. They are freaking liars. The Democrats are lying sons of biatches. Man, this really toasts my hide here. I got to get a drink of water. I'm muting it for a sec. This really chaps my hide, guys. Really chaps my hide. Jeez. They said no and indicated their practice of using preferred names was limited to nicknames such as Johnny for the name John. However, we learned that this was a lie. Line 25, page 33. As months passed, the school continued to stonewall child pose parents. Another block quote. Quote, in January 2024, we repeatedly reached out to our daughter's teachers at the charter school to ask how she was doing. Page 34 at the top. One of our specific questions was whether our daughter was presenting as male at school. We did not get a response from her teachers. Instead, an administrator from Central Valley Charter Schools sent my wife a lengthy email. In that email, the administrator block quoted large portion of the CDE's FAQ guidance and summed up her conclusion with the following statement. This is a quote within the block quote. We cannot share the gender identity of the student with the parent, even if that gender identity is expressed openly in class. Unquote, both of the inside quote and the block quote. Quote, various emails over the next few months confirmed that Yosemite Valley was continuing to use our daughter's preferred male name and pronouns in violation of our instructions and in violation of our religious belief. Number two, the Doe's story. That's D as in dog. D as in dog, OE. It's not their real name. Starting at page 34, line 12. Of course, on this page, for some reason, the lines are not lining up with the text. So this is the first time that that's happened. The clerk of the court, I'm talking to you. You have some errors here. You need to pay attention to these errors. The reason why the lines are there on the side is to line up with the text. That's the whole point of having the lines there. All right. Well, it's close enough where you can say 8 or 9. So, guess it's not too bad, but still, come on, get with it, guys. The parents of child Doe have endured a similar experience. Quote, since the fifth grade, my daughter repeatedly transitioned to and desisted from a male transgender identity, which led me and my wife to request that her school communicate with us forthrightly about her. However, citing to the California Department of Education's FAQ guidance on gender identity, her school repeatedly and directly lied to us and refused to answer our questions. This is a Democrat policy of lying to parents. By the way, it costs taxpayers millions of dollars, several million dollars, to fight this. And then even at the end, they had to pay attorney's fees to the parents, which is another several million dollars. You gotta be kidding me here, guys. How much the Democrats absolutely hate you. They are so confused about basic morality, basic metaphysics. It's just crazy. There's no common sense left. And these people control education? That's really scary. No wonder there's so much grade inflation. Here's a block quote. Wow. Okay. Quote, to find out more about what was happening on campus, my wife immediately set up parent-teacher conferences with three of our daughter's six teachers. In each conference, my wife repeatedly and conspicuously referred to her as my daughter and by her given name. After discussing academics, my wife asked each teacher simply if there was anything about her that the teacher felt was important for us to know, whether socially, emotionally, or for any other reason at all. Although at least two of the teachers seemed distinctly uncomfortable, one by acting defensive and rude, and the other by appearing nervous. Each teacher answered no. Yeah, bootlickers. However, it was, by the way, see the story of Jessica Tapia. She refused to lie to parents and she got fired. Jessica Tapia, Tapia, Jessica Tapia, public school teacher, high school teacher in California. Check her story out. However, it was clear to us that at a minimum, some of the teachers were lying. This was clear because one of her teachers' seating charts showed the use of a male name and pronouns for our daughter. Why do you have pronouns on a seating chart? I never saw that growing up. Additionally, it was evident from this is a block quote still. Sorry, this is still the block quote. The block quote started with to find out more about what was happening on campus, my wife set up. Okay, that was line 19. Additionally, it was evident from our daughter's emails that she was not using her given name in class. This is page 35 at the top. After these parent-teacher conferences, my wife and I met with this principal February 2023. We told the principal that we knew that teachers were using a male name for our daughter and that each of them had lied to her about it. The principal denied any knowledge of the social transition and even denied it was really happening. But the principal stated if a child asked to be referred to a new name and pronouns and to keep this information from parents, quote, this is a quote within the block quote, we are instructed to protect the rights of, and then there's a bunch of letters. I don't really understand what they mean. It doesn't really spell out a word. LGBTQ. I don't even know what word that's supposed to be. That there's no vowel. What the hell kind of word is that? Students. Supposed to be an adjective, I guess. We have to do that. It's the law. Unquote within the block quote. Continuing the block quote, my wife asked the principal to show her that law. Principal then navigated on her laptop to California Department of Education FAQ page on AB 1266 and gender identity. My wife responded with, that's not law, that's FAQs on a website. But the principal responded, yes, it is, and we have to follow that. Unquote of the block quote. Declaration of John Poe. If a student changes his or her name, do, well, hold on a sec. I found another story, guys. I'm sorry, I found another error. Clerk of the court, what the heck is going on with you? Says Declaration of John Poe. It should be John Doe. This is John Doe's story. DOE. D as in dog. Come on, guys. Jeez. If a student changes his or her name due to the school's maintenance of a fluid gender identity construct, these parents would find the change odious to their own religious beliefs. Yet the state defendant's policies. Oh, you got the apostrophe, the S apostrophe there. Good job. Line 16 on page 35. I can't believe I'm clapping when I see an apostrophe. Get with it, guys. Jeez. Yet the state defendant's policies usually prevent teachers and staff from communicating to a parent this important information. Think of it. A baby is born. The parents give the child its legal name, perhaps in reverence of a hero or heroine of their religion. The child goes to school. The child expresses a newfound desire to be regarded as a different gender with a different name, unbeknownst to the parents. School teachers start calling on the child by the different name. School administrators keep the child's progress reports under the different name. The different name reinforcement continues for months and then semesters and then years. Meanwhile, the child with a new name's parents are left in the dark. And if they happen to ask, the request is met with silence or vague references to a meeting with an administrator. Even if the parents somehow do find out and ask the school to discontinue referring to the child's unofficial assumed name, the policies will not permit the school employees to accommodate the parental request. We're on page 36 at the top. State education policies substantially interfere. Such state educational policies substantially interfere with the First Amendment rights of parents to direct the religious upbringing of their children. As Mahmoud teaches, quote, government burdens the religious exercise of parents when it requires them to submit their children to instruction that poses a very real threat of undermining the religious beliefs and practices that the parents wish to instill. After all, government schools, like all government institutions, may not place unconstitutional burdens on religious exercise. Unquote. Many plaintiff parents have no other choice than to enroll their children in public schools because the scholastic alternatives are costly. State truancy laws preclude opting out completely. Consequently, public schools must reasonably attempt to accommodate parents' free exercise rights. As Mahmoud observes, quote, it is both insulting and legally unsound to tell parents that they must abstain from public education in order to raise their children in their religious faiths, when alternatives can be prohibitively expensive and they already contribute to financing the public schools, unquote. A defense of administrative difficulty is not sufficient. Parents do not need to know what happens every day at school, but some sort of regular information may be constitutionally required. The state defendants complain that parents are trying to micromanage the school day. That is not accurate. However, the state defendants' policies do impact students every school day. Every day that a student is addressed by school staff using a gender incongruent name that insults the faith of the student's parents is another day of constitutional injury. Schools may not insulate themselves from legal liability by weaving the free exercise offense into everyday school life. Like the school under review in Mahmoud, California's public school system, quote, may not insulate itself from First Amendment liability by its weaving religiously offensive material throughout its curriculum and thereby significantly increase the difficulty and complexity of remedying the parents' constitutional injuries. Were it otherwise, the state could nullify parents' First Amendment rights simply by saturating public schools' core curricula with materials that undermines family decisions in the area of religious training. The framers intended for free exercise of religion to flourish, unquote. That's Thomas. Clarence Thomas concurring at Mahmoud. The Mahmoud majority reminds public school administrators that they cannot escape its obligation to honor parents' free exercise rights by deliberately designing its curriculum to make parental opt-outs more cumbersome. Moreover, government cannot be excused based on its desire to welcome and protect transgender students from those who believe gender is fixed. So hold on a sec. Let me read that again. Moreover, government cannot be excused based on its desire to welcome and protect transgender students from those who believe gender is fixed. A public school, quote, cannot purport to rescue one group of students from a stigma and isolation by stigmatizing and isolating another, unquote, based on Mahmoud at 2363. Continuing the quote from Mahmoud, quote, a classroom environment that is welcoming to all students is something to be commended, but such an environment cannot be achieved through hostility toward the religious beliefs of students and their parents, unquote, at 2363. Previously, this court applied standard free exercise analysis to similar gender secrecy policies adopted by the Escondido Union School District and concluded that strict scrutiny applied and the policies failed strict scrutiny. The same analysis would yield the same outcome today concerning the parents' free exercise. Okay, we're missing an apostrophe here again. Line 19, and I'm thinking it's line 19. The lines are not lining up. Man, I'm torched about this. Parents' free exercise should be parents' with an apostrophe S, it's possessive. Free exercise claim against the state defendant's policies. See the apostrophe there? State defendants, good. But that analysis may be bypassed when the burden is of the same character as it was, as was the burden in Yoder. It's referring to Wisconsin versus Yoder, 1971. Here, was it 1972? I can't remember. Here, compared to the religious burden in Mahmud, the California policies impose a similar, if not greater, burden on free exercise rights. Consequently, Mahmud leads the way by skipping the ordinary two-step inquiry and moving directly to the application of strict scrutiny. Quote, thus, when a law imposes a burden of the same character as that in Yoder, strict scrutiny is appropriate regardless of whether the law is neutral or generally applicable, unquote. To survive strict scrutiny, a state must demonstrate that its policy both advances interests of the highest order and is narrowly tailored. On page 38 at the top, the state defendants argue that Mahmud does not apply. They argue that a parent does not possess a religious exercise right to dictate that a school reject their child's gender identity. They argue that plaintiffs' lack of an underlying constitutional basis for altering any school policy respecting the gender identities of students. They argue that there is no constitutional need for notification when their child comes within the scope of such a policy. Nevertheless, this court disagrees. We're on line 11, and the lines are lining up with the text. What a concept. On page 38, I'm going to look at my notes really quick and hang on. Let me see if I have any notes that need to be. You guys, I have notes that I make in, I have notes that I make, guys, in the margins with pencil. I print it out. You know why I print it out? Because I want to kill trees. Every time I see a tree, I want to murder the tree. I am a serial killer of trees. And they make a movie of me. I'm a psycho with trees. I just dream of paper and I dream of like sawdust. And no, I'm just kidding. No, it's just easier, guys. There's no ads. When you have it printed out, say, check it out. Check it before you wreck it. Okay. Look, the sound it makes, it's a physical object you can hold in your hand. You can have a cigar and then you staple it to what you printed out and you can write on it with pencil. Okay. No electricity needed. No distractions either. Okay, let me look. Just saying here. All right. So we got through page 38. We could go further. But we're going to stop there. Why? Because I'm going to go have a cigar. I can't believe. I mean, this covered lying to parents. We're going to do a chaplain's corner here, guys. Lord, have mercy on us. Thank you for Roger Benitez, Lord. Father, thank you for Roger Benitez. Please bless him. Bless the U.S. Senate in confirming his replacement and President Trump in his deliberation of who to pick. That bless the staff in the White House that helps President Trump find the right person to replace Roger Benitez. We thank you, Lord, for his legacy. We ask that you would protect it and protect us from these Democrat policies that want to hurt and actually do hurt, successfully hurt the not the, the conditions for flourishing here, Lord. We ask that you bring about these conditions flourishing. Thank you, Lord. Okay, now we got Psalm 57. Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts, the children of man whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves. Verse 7, Psalm 57 in English Standard Version. My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp and lyre. Lyre, Lyre, not Liar. Lyre, lyre, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O God, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. Psalm 57, a moment of reflection. Okay, now we got a reading from Streams in the Desert, Kalman Publications, Lost Feliz Station, Los Angeles, California. The original non-woke edition. I am jealous over you with God's own jealousy. 2 Corinthians 11:2. How an old harper dotes on his harp. How he fondles and caresses it as a child resting on his bosom. His life is bound up in it, but see him tuning it. He grasps it firmly, strikes a chord with the sharp, quick blow, and while it quivers as if in pain, he leans over intently to catch the first note that rises. The note, as he feared, is false and harsh. He strains the cord with the torturing thumbscrew, and though it seems ready to snap with the tension, he strikes it again, bending down to listen softly as before, till at length you see a smile on his face as the first true tone trembles upward. We're on page 31, Streams in the Desert, January 28th. So it may be that God is dealing with you, loving you better than any harper loves his harp. He finds you a mass of jarring discords. He wrings your heartstrings with some torturing anguish. He bends over you tenderly, striking and listening, and hearing only a harsh murmur, strikes you again while his heart bleeds for you, anxiously waiting for that strain, "Not my will, but thine be done," which is melody sweet to his ear as angels' songs. Nor will he cease to strike, going to page 32 now, until your chastened soul shall blend with all the pure, infinite harmonies of his own being. Okay, continuing, quote, "Oh, the sweetness that dwells in a harp of many strings, while each all vocal with love and a tuneful harmony rings. But oh, the wail and the discord when one and another is rent tensionless, broken, and lost from the cherished instrument. For rapture of love is linked with the pain or fear of loss, and the hand that takes the crown must ache with many a cross. Yet he who hath never a conflict hath never a victim's, never a victor's palm, and only the toilers know the sweetness of rest and calm. Only between the storms can the alpine traveler know transcendent glory and clearness, marvels of gleam and glow. Had he the brightness unbroken of cloudless summer days, this had been dimmed by the dust and the veil of a brooding haze. Who would dare the choice, neither or both to know the finest quiver of joy or the agony thrill of woe? Never the exquisite pain, then never the exquisite bliss, for the heart that is dull to that can never be strung to this. A moment of reflection. Streams in the Desert, January 28th. That was the Chaplain's Corner here on the Republican Professor podcast. I've been your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. Today is 8 April, 2026, years after Jesus. It's a Wednesday. We'll see you guys next time. God bless you.